From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate it. Thank you. We want to welcome everybody to this week's show. It's going to be a good one. We want to offer a special welcome to some guests right here in the theater, some new residents of our home state of Illinois, the prisoners from Guantanamo, whose chains will soon be clinking in the land of Lincoln. It's great to have you guys here. We love the way you've accessorized those orange jumpsuits. You've made them your own, and I think that's great. Now, you guys are all going to love it here in Illinois. That deep dish pizza, we don't actually eat the stuff. We use it to smuggle contraband. And, of course, if any of you can pitch, you'll be allowed to start for the Cubs next season. So anyway, if you're listening at home, help us show these folks how hospitable we are. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Susie in Redmond, Oregon.
Hey, Susie, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Now, where is Redmond exactly?
Redmond is in central Oregon. It's right near Bend, Oregon.
Oh, sure.
So it's considered high desert out here.
Oh, really? And what do you do out there in the desert?
I do natural resource conservation work.
Oh, really? You're out there trying to save the planet?
One little tiny piece at a time, yes.
Well, good for you. Well, welcome to the show, Susie. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a humorist and author of the new audiobook, It's Just Like I Told You, 25 Years of Comment and Comic Pieces. It's available at a download near you. It's Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hello, Susie.
Hi, Tom.
Next, it's one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column and the scourge of the Salahis, Miss Roxanne Roberts. And lastly, a comedian whose CD, I Heart Jokes, is available at paulapoundstone.com, Miss Paula Poundstone. So, Susie, you ready to play?
I am, I think.
All right. Be sure, because it's happening now. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Of course, Carol Castle will recreate for you three voices from the week's news. Your job, identify it or explain it. Do that two times out of three. You'll win our prize, Carl's voice, on your home answering technology, whatever it may be. Ready to go?
Yes, I need that prize, yes.
You do?
I do.
Baby needs a new answering machine message, is what you're thinking. All right, here's your first quote.
I don't feel like a spoiler. I feel like somebody who's wanted to be for health care reform.
That was somebody who is totally a spoiler. Threw a big wrench into Democrats' plans for health care reform. Who is it?
That would have to be, as one commentator refers to him, Joe the Bummer Lieberman.
Joe Lieberman, Senator Joe Lieberman, right. Somewhere in America, sometime later today, in a liberal household, a mother will warn her 8-year-old son, she'll say, Mandela, if you don't finish your quinoa, then Joe Lieberman is going to get you. Senator Lieberman, of course, said he couldn't back provisions of health care reform, the ones that he was for just 3 months ago, threw the whole thing into disarray. The Senate Democrats are so frustrated with Lieberman's constant sabotage that in a last-ditch effort, Harry Reid arranged to have three spirits visit Lieberman on Christmas Eve. The ghosts of health care past, present, and future. But after only half an hour, they gave up. They said, frankly, we'd all rather just go back to being dead.
Well, I thought that meeting that the president had at the White House this week with all of the Democratic senators was really just about how they're going to punish Joe Lieberman when this is all over.
It's kind of potluck. Everyone's just picking something. One guy said he would do the short shooting.
Right.
Wedgies.
Yeah, wedgies. Right. That's a lot of volunteers for wedgies.
Of course, right. Of course. If you gave him a wedgie, how could you tell?
All right. Susie, here's your next quote.
Insulation is sexy stuff.
Ooh, that was hot, Carl.
Thank you.
That was somebody trying to sell part of his economic stimulus program by stressing the sex appeal of insulation this week. Who was it?
Barack Obama.
It was. So, hey, you people who thought our president was some kind of intellectual automaton with no real passion or feelings, not so fast. The president appeared at Home Depot to pitch his program to give out tax breaks for home weatherization. I'd go on, but this is a family show. But we now know what turns the president on. Pink fiberglass insulation. Imagine the president's pillow talk. Your eyes are like two passive solar arrays. Talk heat exchanges to me, Michelle.
I'm thinking the president hasn't spent a lot of time around insulation.
No, no.
It's actually kind of itchy.
The president is expanding this bringing sexy back approach to other policy initiatives. The Department of Energy is going to hire teams of scantily clad weather strippers. And the State Department says that if the Afghan surge lasts more than 4 years, you should consult your doctor.
You know, they want to do this make work thing with this weatherization thing. Remember in New York, like 15, 20 years ago, where all the homeless people were out there with Windex bottles?
Yeah, squeegee guys.
Yeah, now it'd be caulk guns, and they'd just be roaming through the neighborhoods. Caulk your windows? Caulk your windows, sir.
And then they spray caulk on them before you can do anything about it. Yeah. Very good, Susie. Here is your last quote.
Yes, we're in deep doo-doo, but without him, we would have been in much deeper doo-doo.
That was former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson explaining why Time Magazine was right to name who Person of the Year.
Ben Bernanke,
right. The Federal Reserve Chief was credited with doing something to end the economic crisis after doing nothing to prevent it. By this standard, in which you get rewarded for doing too little too late, you could give Barack Obama the Nobel Peace Prize. Oh, wait.
So the praise for him is that he didn't... We're in deep doo-doo, but not as deep as it could have been.
That was Henry Paulson, speaking of it. The idea is that as bad as things are, if it weren't for Ben Bernanke being at the helm...
Well, that's the citation I want on my Pulitzer right there. He didn't make near as big a mess of this as he could have.
Yes. He mitigated the disaster somewhat. Carl, how did Susie do in our quiz?
Fine, Peter. 3 correct answers, Susie, so you get that phone message.
Well done.
Yay, thank you. Thank you. Kiss the wife, I hug the kids, I pet the dogs and cats. I never lose anything, my car keys on my hat. Because I'm a man.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, the holiday season, it's upon us. Many people are giving what are called ethical gifts, that is, a donation to a worthy cause in a person's name rather than an actual present. But a study by the Association for Consumer Research shows that this trend has resulted in what this year?
More job loss.
No.
Loss of friends.
Actually, yes. The answer is a lot of really disappointed people. Ethical gifts, that's for when you want to make the holidays a happy time for everyone except the people you're giving presents to. In this study, and they did a little anthropological study, 250 women were given either a spa basket filled with soaps or body creams or a donation in their name to a humanitarian organization. They were given this by their husbands, and their reactions were measured. Basically, the reactions went like this. For the basket, it was like, oh, sweetie, that's wonderful, so thoughtful, so kind, thank you. Oh, a donation in my name. Oh, you care about the world, and you don't care that I'll never touch you again. How interesting. Now, when it comes down to it, though, you have to look between the lines in the study. The problem may have been the charities that these men chose. The top 3 were something called Race for the Couch, People for the Ethical Eatment of Animals, and the International Foundation for the Widening of TV Screens.
You know, if somebody gave me a basket of creams...
Yeah?
I wouldn't be that happy, frankly.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as a recycler, I have a problem with the whole basket concept. You got the plastic outside that I don't think it recycles. You got the straw stuff that I don't know where the hell to put it. And you got the basket. What do you do with the basket? Not to mention that I don't really want creams, but that's secondary.
But you can reuse the basket.
Reuse it for what? Tisketing?
There's some strong feelings about
yeah.
it.
But don't you at least feel...
It is kind of years of basket receiving welling up. You can feel that, can't you?
Right.
But don't you feel a certain satisfaction knowing that you got the useless basket rather than some damned poor needy person?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Nothing would annoy, you know, a starving refugee more than a cream basket.
Thanks, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Pat Kiragoyan in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Hey, Pat, how are you?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Pretty cold now in St. Paul.
We had a kind of a warm-up today. Got up around 25.
Wow. So. How do you spend your winters? How do you avoid that cabin fever, which I know is a problem in Minnesota?
I must say I do stay inside a lot in the winter, but I try to go to things like fitness centers and
sure.
work out there. You know
how I used to cope with cabin fever when I lived in Minnesota by attacking my housemates with an axe around March. it released a lot of tension, is what I'm saying. Well, welcome to our show, Patrick. You're going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Patrick's topic?
Is it nature or nurture? We'll never know. It's nature.
We know that evolution shaped our species. It's why we walk upright, why we crave fatty foods, why we put photos from 20 years ago in our Match.com profile. But this week, we heard that something unexpected may be caused by our genetic inheritance. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about a surprising new evolutionary theory. Choose the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Okay, all set.
Let's hear first from Roxanne Roberts.
What is it with crazy cat ladies anyway? Yale anthropologist Doug Techter was fed up after dating three girlfriends with a total of 11 cats. Techter says the relationship between women and cats closely resembles the mother-infant bond, and females are genetically programmed to fuss over felines. In a 3-year study, Techter filmed women and their cats, then compared their behavior to mothers and newborns in a primitive Indonesian tribe. Both infants and cats demand a great deal of attention and monopolize females, reducing opportunities for them to reproduce. Not that new moms or cat ladies are much into sex anyway. Quote, I used to resent the cats, Techter told the New York Times. Now I realize they're just manipulating the evolutionary code for a constant source of food.
Cat ladies explained by an evolutionary theory. Your next story of something genetically predetermined comes from Tom Baudet.
Why does that asinine dad dancing, where someone's father makes a complete fool of himself and his family at weddings and bar mitzvahs, endure? Turns out it's genetic and meant to chase away young women. That is the conclusion, at least, of researchers at the University of Hertfordshire in England. The message their dancing sends out is, stay away, I'm not fertile, claims Dr. Peter Lovett. Which contradicts the three main previous conclusions. Stay away, I'm drunk. There's a hamster in my pants. And I never liked this guy you just married, and I'm doing what I can to sabotage your happiness. Since natural selection is all about survival, there is another disturbing conclusion to be drawn from the fact that bad dad dancing has endured in our genetic makeups. It leads one to believe that our strapping young ancestors killed off any older men who could dance well. Think of this the next time you see Uncle Frank doing his John Travolta interpretations to the Bee Gees' Stayin' Alive and Be Kind. That's exactly what he's doing.
Bad dad dancing. Why do middle-aged men act so foolishly in the dance floor? Because their genes tell them to. Your last story of nature over nurture comes from Paula Poundstone.
Do you have nosy, snooty neighbors? The ones who express that extra interest? I heard some people at your house last night. What time did they leave? Is that their Chevette? It turns out it's in their genes. Anthropologist Susan Suomo explains, our hominid relatives that protected their groups by raising their noses in the air to sense and give early warning of fire and predators were revered. So the classic snooty nose-in-the-air gesture is genetic. It's not just snobbish. It's evolution. If some hominids weren't curious or nosy, they'd be killed. It's tough to tell, however, says Suomu, why it hasn't fallen away a bit, like body hair and walking on all fours. Your children go to public school? Oh, that's nice. They'll meet so many different kinds of people.
All right, these are your choices. Turns out, according to at least one evolutionary biologist, one of these behaviors is genetically determined and selected for by evolution. Was it from Roxanne Roberts, the enthusiasm that certain ladies have for many, many cats? From Tom Baudet, the habit of certain middle-aged men have to get up and dance like idiots at social events? Or from Paula Poundstone, the habit of some people of acting snooty and nosy toward their neighbors? Which of these is evolutionarily determined?
Oh, my word. I'll take the last one about the snoopy neighbors.
Snooty, snooping neighbors.
Snooty. I'll go for that.
All right. Well, we actually spoke to the scientist who has posited this theory. Here he is.
When men get to about 35, they then start to use uncoordinated dance moves. And, of course, what happens then is they're producing dance moves on the dance floor, which women find very unattractive.
That was Dr. Peter Lovett of Hertfordshire University in England. I'm so sorry, Patrick, but as you now know, Tom Baudet had the right answer. You didn't win. You earned a point, though, for Paula for her convincing-sounding story, which I'm sure she's very grateful.
I thank you, and Mrs. Kravitz from Bewitched thanks you.
Patrick, thanks so much for playing.
All right, thank you.
And now the game where we ask people who have done it all to do just one more thing. It's called Not My Job. Now, it's that time of the year where our show should be doing our Christmas special with songs and special guests and sweaters and general merriment. But I can't sing. Carl refuses to wear anything less formal than a sport coat and tie. And people as bitter as us, we don't do merry. So we are outsourcing those duties to the man who practically invented the heartwarming Christmas special, the singer and entertainer who's been warming hearts for almost 70 years. He's got a new book out called Moon River and Me. Andy Williams, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
We're glad to have you. Now, your book is a fascinating story of your incredibly long and interesting career in show business. I grew up seeing your Christmas specials when I was a kid. I had no idea that you had actually started as a child performer. It was part of a family group, right?
Yeah, I started like the Osmond Brothers, I guess, would be the easiest way of recognizing what we were like. We started when I was 7 years old, and I had three older brothers, and we sang on the radio in Des Moines, Iowa, on the Iowa Barn Dance Frolic.
Wow.
For about 6 years. And then my father had this great idea that we were going to be great stars.
Yeah.
And we ended up going out to California, and he was going to get us in the movie. Later on, after when I was 22 years old, my brothers decided that they're going to break up. And that's when I started singing alone.
Singing alone. Now, you did make it to Hollywood, and you're in the movies. In fact, we understand that you had a role in a Lauren Bacall movie in your Hollywood days.
Well, I sang a song for Lauren Bacall when I was about 14 years old. And I was making a movie out there with my brothers. And I went out to see the musical director of the movie and said, I'm going out to play baseball now because I've done all my schoolwork. And he heard my voice and he said, that's the voice I've been looking for. And it sounded like Lauren Bacall, he thought.
Wow. Really?
I sang a song called How Little We Know. But that was my voice, yes.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Now, you were famous. This is what I remember watching you when I was a kid. The classic family-oriented Christmas specials. It was you, Andy Williams, in a sweater, and there was a fire going in the fireplace, and you sang some songs, and the doorbell rang, and in came a wonderful guest, and you'd sing with that person. So you had this wholesome image.
Well, I had most of those shows were just my family.
Yeah.
And the Osmond brothers were on it, and it was a really family Christmas show that everybody seemed to enjoy a lot.
It ruined my life.
It ruined your life?
It ruined my life.
Why did
it ruin well.
It?
Because Christmas has never been like that.
Oh, well.
How did you get your kids to be sort of that well behaved and that willing? I mean, if I were to say to my son, come on, honey, we're going to go do, you know, the Christmas show, he would say no.
Well, that's your son. My kids were much better.
There you go. How, I got to ask you, how true to life was that wholesome Andy Williams image? You just wrote a memoir, which we read, and in this memoir, you tell some pretty interesting stories because you seem to know everybody. And you ran with a pretty wild crowd. You were hanging out in Vegas with Dean Martin and his friends. You were touring around the world with some people who knew how to have a good time.
I didn't write only about the good parts of my life.
That's true. You wrote about some of the great parts of your life. That's what I'm trying to do.
I wrote about some of the great parts, and I wrote about some of the bad things I've done.
You've had your ups and downs.
Dumb things I've done. And I wanted it to be an honest book.
There was a very funny story you told about a day off you had in Oslo.
Yes. That was one of my dumb periods.
All right. Can you tell us about it?
I can't tell you about it. I think it's something that isn't a television kind of story.
All right.
You know, you can write things down on a book that you necessarily wouldn't think you'd want to spread to the whole world.
I understand. Well, let me ask you this. You were a dancer in your youth when you had your nightclub act, right?
Well, I wasn't a dancer. I was taught how to move. Well, you know, my brothers and I were taught how to move by Bob Alton, who put together this act with Kay Thompson.
This is a nightclub act. You tour around the country.
A nightclub act, yeah. And we did a number. Kay Thompson and the Williams brothers did a number called Suzette.
Yeah.
And at the end of, you know, doing this song, I had to fall down flat on my back and slide.
Yeah.
Because if you don't slide, you'll kill yourself. But if you slide, hit your hands right, you can slide and you won't hurt your back.
Right.
And when we opened, it was a small stage, and I landed on my back, and I slid under a table.
Right.
You know, among some peas and carrots and some other stuff left over from
Look, there's dinner. Dean Martin right down there.
Right. And the lady said, he's looking at my dress. And I couldn't say anything because what am I going to say, you know, under a table? And so I had to wait there until Kay clapped her hands and we could all get up. And I had to do that three different times. And finally, on the third time, the guy ended up kicking me in the face, in the ear, and saying, stop that, whatever you're doing.
I wanted to ask you, I think it was Paul Anka who put out a record of his version, big band versions of like modern pop tunes. Like
yeah, I think he did.
Yeah. Have you ever thought of, like, tackling some modern songs, doing your approach to, something by Lady Gaga?
No, I'm just fascinated by her, but not enough to make a record of her.
I see.
I don't quite understand her, but I understand.
Oh, I think you do, sir. Like I said, I've read your book. I think you do.
Well.
No, but are you happy singing your standards, the classics that you're so known for? Do you want
to? Of course I am. I don't, you know, I'm not going to go out and do some stuff, well, not rap, but I mean even hip-hop.
Really?
You know, because that's not what I do. I would not hear Tony Bennett do a bunch of that crap either, you know.
Well, Andy Williams, we're so pleased to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game that this week we're calling...
You shouldn't have. No, seriously, you shouldn't have.
It's just a few days before Christmas, so it's time for Wait Wait's semi-regular gift guide. This time we're going to focus on gadgets. These are namely ones you hope don't end up in your stocking. Answer two out of three questions about odd gadgets available in the marketplace today. Answer these questions correctly. You'll win our prize from one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is legendary singer Andy Williams playing for?
Andy is playing for Lisa Goldberg from Roseland, New York.
All right.
Oh, Lisa, I love her.
Oh. All right. Here's your first question, Andy. Of course, the most popular gadget that people already have is a cell phone. So a lot of people are coming up with cell phone accessories, such as which of these? A, the volumizer, a cardboard megaphone you attach to the cell to increase volume.
I don't like that.
You don't like that one. The cell finder, another phone that dials your first phone so you can find it when you lose it.
I like that.
You like that. Or the cell mate, which is a kind of spring-loaded headset that just holds your cell phone against your ear so you don't have to hold it there with your hand.
Well, that's kind of dumb.
It is dumb, but it doesn't mean it's not real. So which one are you going to pick?
Well, the one that I said before that I like.
You like the cell finder. It's the second phone you buy that dials your first phone so you can find it.
Right.
As clever as that idea is, I'm afraid it was the cellmate. It's kind of a metal vise you can buy that holds your phone to your ear.
And does that make me a bad person?
That, sir, would be impossible to do.
No, not after Oslo.
No. It does mean that you have to get the next two answers correct. So let's try the next one.
Okay.
Now, one of the best sources of great gadgets is the SkyMall catalog. You find it in airplanes. And in it, we found a great device we all want this Christmas. What is it? A, the day clock, a clock that just tells you what day it is. B, the
eye... If you need that, you're in trouble.
It's true. B, the eyeball massager. Or C, corded electric heater gloves.
I like the eyeball massager.
You like the eyeball massager?
Yeah.
That little machine that you put in your forehead and it rubs your eyes for
yes,
you?
Yes, I like that.
No, I'm sorry. It was, in fact, A, the day clock. Just in case you can't remember, it's Tuesday. All right. Now, Andy, do you have an iPod by any chance?
No, I don't.
Well, one of the big products, of course, is iPod Dock, something you plug your iPod into so it plays music. And which of these is a real iPod Dock, something you can plug your iPod into? Is it A, the iPod Dock doggy sweater that has speakers built into the side so it converts your very own puppy into a walking boombox? B, an iPod dock inside your refrigerator that turns on whenever you open the fridge. Or C, what's called the iIron, so you can listen to music while you're ironing.
Well, I iron a lot. So.
You do? You iron a lot?
Well, no, I've never ironed in my life.
That's surprising, because you always look well-pressed.
You know, I have help.
Oh, I understand that. All right.
No, so I would say, what's the first one?
The doggy. You plug it into your dog, and your dog walks
I love out. Dogs so much.
Yes?
I've got three dogs, and
yes.
I love them. I would pick that one.
You're right. You got it. Well done. Yes, you did.
I got one right away.
You got one, Andy.
I can't believe it.
You did it.
Does that make me a good person?
Yeah. Oh, man, the
it
best.
It makes you a wonderful person.
Oh, great.
Carl, how did Andy Williams do?
Andy had one correct answer, Peter, but he needed two to win for Lisa
Goldberg. I don't care about winning. What am I
doing? Oh, good for you. Andy Williams' book is Moon River and Me. I recommend it, especially the story about his trip to Oslo. Andy Williams, such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for all the music and all the good times. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank
Andy
you,
Williams,
Peter.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I enjoyed it a lot. Thank
you. Enjoyed having you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Andy. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose.
In just a minute, Carl sings It's the Most Wonderful Rhyme of the Year in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, some news out of North Korea now. On the orders of Kim Jong-il, the government there has launched an aggressive campaign against what?
A campaign. Well, he likes movies, so it's not going to be that. Christmas?
No, despite his Grinch-like
demeanor. All right, then I'm going to need a hint.
He's taking a hard line on faux hawks.
Oh, teenage haircuts.
Well, it's actually hairstyles is the
hairstyles.
Answer. He's taking a strong stance against foreign hairstyles. In a re-education campaign against corrupt Western imperialist dues, such as the mullet of oppression. North Korean men and women are being told to keep their hair, quote, tidy and simple. Now, you may be thinking, but the dear leader, Kim Jong-il, has a fantastic pompadour. Well, pompadours, we've now learned from North Korea, are in fact a traditional Korean hairstyle invented by his great-great-grandfather, Kim Jong Elvis.
Although I'm not a fan of oppression, I would have to throw in with him on the mullet.
You feel?
I think the mullet has kept us back.
Yeah. As a mullet survivor, I would agree.
You had a mullet?
I did.
Wait.
I lived in Alaska. I had no idea.
They had no mirrors right then.
Wait. How old were you?
It was old enough to know better. Let's just put it that way. You know? When my older son was in high school, they had a mulletin board at their school where they put up pictures of outrageous mullets from movies and stars and all that, and I had central prominent place in it.
So what was the first... When did you reduce your mullet use?
It's been 3-4 years. No, well, when I moved out of Alaska, it was just like I looked around and just went, hey... This looks really stupid.
Well, see?
Whoa.
Kim Jong-il is preventing his people from having that bad feeling.
Right. Roxanne, according to researchers in Germany, men can increase their life expectancy by doing what?
Cross-dressing.
No.
No.
It's actually something that most men do anyway.
Shaving.
Oh, they don't like to get caught doing it, particularly by the person they're doing it to.
Staring.
Yes, staring at women's breasts in particular. Apparently, according to this new study, what the food at Hooters takes away from your life expectancy, the waitresses give back. Volunteers in Frankfurt were divided into two groups, one which was encouraged to ogle women's breasts every day and one which was instructed to abstain. They found guys who could do that. Oglers had lower blood pressure and better coronary health overall, the only side effect being slight bruising from being constantly slapped in the back of the head by their wives. According to one doctor, Karen Weatherby, quote, just 10 minutes at staring at the charms of a well-endowed female is roughly equivalent to a 30-minute aerobics workout. You know, I'm reading this to you, and we found this in some reputable news source, and I simply don't believe it.
I'm just going to say, this can't be true. Sort of going back to our evolutionary thing, all right? Why would staring at breasts extend your life?
Well, the idea is that it's exciting in the way that certain kinds of stimulation are exciting. It makes your heart race. It makes your blood flow. This is good for you, we know.
So this is an aerobic activity.
Yeah, the problem is if this were true, if staring at breasts made men live longer, there'd be 400-year-old men walking up and down the streets.
So this is yet another bogus study.
This is basically a study that compared men who ogled women's breasts and men who lied about not ogling women's breasts. So it turns out, like, maybe...
So it could be that lying takes years off your life.
That could be.
Right.
We can only hope.
Are the stress induced by forcing yourself to not ogle women's breasts would kill you?
Paula, moving on. Paula, the scourge of performance-enhancing drugs continues to stain athletic competition. This week, competitors at what sports world championships were tested for PEDs?
Sports world championships.
Yes.
No idea. Was it car racing?
It was not car racing.
Ah.
It's an indoor sport.
An indoor sport.
I'll give you a hint.
Thank you.
You know, whatever they're taking, it's not appetite suppressants.
Oh, was it a pie-eating contest?
It was, in fact, the World Championships of pie-eating.
Oh, well, that has always been drug-riddled.
Yeah. That's why they're so large. It must be steroids. On Tuesday, the greatest pie-eaters from all around the world managed to fit through the door of the World Pie-Eating Championships in Manchester, England. And once inside, they were tested for performance-enhancing drugs. What qualifies as PEDs in the world of competitive pie eating? First,
I got a guess.
And this is true. Gravy. Because of its, quote, lubricative advantage. Also, cough syrup, which lubricates and anesthetizes to get the pies down faster without the pesky side effects of a shoehorn.
Organizers are going to keep an eye out for the telltale signs of doping, drowsiness, vomiting, swelling, and poor judgment. Unfortunately, those are also the symptoms of entering a pie-eating contest.
Now, I would have thought that just marijuana would have been...
You'd think.
Yeah.
Is that an Alaska thing, too?
How do you think he decided to get that mullet?
I didn't even know I had it.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link at our website at waitwait.npr.org. Also, you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois, and our upcoming show in March in New Orleans, Louisiana. Tickets are now on sale and going fast, so get on it. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. Diane Laura from New York.
Hey, Diane. How are things in New York?
Oh, things are great. Thanks.
They are. Everybody I know in New York says that, no matter how things are going. Things are great.
It's the best city in the world. Are you kidding me? It's Christmas time. It is a fabulous time. I'm sorry. I'm sure Chicago's lovely.
As well, if that makes up for what you just did.
Oh, you know, it's Christmas time. You've got everything decorated. It's just absolutely fabulous here.
That's a great nice. Diane, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
The financial world drifts without anchor. Now amusement park games help my rancor. It's just like the mole popping out of the hole. So now I can play whack-a...
Banker.
Yes, whack-a banker. The amusement park game that's the next big thing. Where is the pleasure, the savage glee, the sense of satisfaction in whacking a mere mole? What have moles done to the global economy? So, British inventor Tim Hunkin has introduced whack-a banker. Players are given 30 seconds to whack as many bald pop-up bankers as they can. The game's very popular at his amusement park, but it's running into some technical problems. Hunkin says, quote, and this is true, I keep having to replace worn-out mallets. It's really bad when people who are playing the game try to rip apart the cabinet to go in and get them. Here is your next limerick.
I forget all the lovers I lose, even what's-his-name from that long cruise, and yet my mind brings back my sleek leather sling back. I never forget fancy...
Right. According to a web survey, 92% of women can remember the first pair of shoes they bought, but fewer than 2 out of 3 could name the first guy they kissed. According to the study's director, quote, women treat shoes like best friends, and it seems their footwear memories last longer than those of their past lovers, unquote. So high school guys nervous about that first date coming up? If you want it to be memorable, throw up on their shoes. Now, let me ask you guys, because some women in our office were like, no. But is this true, Roxanne? Can you remember the first guy you kissed? And can you remember the first pair of shoes you bought?
I have some very, very vivid memories of shoes.
Yes. Not so much guys?
I think I lusted after shoes in ways that I have never lusted after.
Very good. All right, here is your last limerick.
As my radio plays through the night, the station I choose is quite trite. As a man, I should rock, but I go with the schlock. I really like my FM.
Night, trite.
Right.
A little tricky.
Right.
Right. We can hear you.
She's using the rhyming clues, which is a good sign.
Yes, I know.
Rock that rhymes with night?
Yes.
Rock radio that rhymes with Carl Kelly on my voicemail. Rock radio that rhymes with night.
Well, since you've already won, how about if I just give it to you?
Please?
Light. How about light rock? Light?
Oh,
L-I-T-E,
no,
light?
Sorry. Light rock's lovely.
Isn't it? You're not obligated to say that.
But not as lovely as New York at Christmas. Yeah.
I thought you meant rock like granite. I was thinking light like...
Until quite recently, radio executives depended on listener surveys to tell them what was popular. The problem? People lie. They lie like rugs. But now executives can monitor people's listening habits with new gadgets called portable people meters. And those heartless devices are ratting all the men out as closeted Celine Dion fans. Needless to say, as more and more people are forced to admit embarrassing listening habits, we expect our ratings to skyrocket. Carl, how did Diane do in our quiz?
Well enough, Peter. Diane, you had two correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done.
You know, thank you, Carl. Thank you,
thank
Peter.
Thank you, Diane.
You've made my holiday season.
I'm so glad. Thanks so much. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Paula Poundstone has the lead. Peter,
oh my goodness.
She has 4 points. Roxanne Roberts has 3. Tom Baudet has 2.
All right. Tom, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. When asked to grade his first year in office, blank gave himself a B+.
President Obama.
Right. 4 days after being attacked with a souvenir cathedral replica, blank was released from the hospital.
Berlusconi.
Right. To give borrowers a break over the holidays, Citigroup announced it was suspending blanks for 30 days.
Foreclosures.
Right. This week, voters in blank elected Anise Parker, their first openly gay mayor.
Houston.
Right. When a man attacked a woman with a salami in a German supermarket, she defended herself using a blank as a dagger.
Breadstick.
No, a 4-pound wedge of Parmesan cheese.
A British judge
granted an emergency injunction preventing employees of British Airways from blanking over Christmas.
Striking.
Right. ABBA was one of the groups chosen for induction into the blank.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right. After being attacked by his monkeys at a performance, a trainer in China surely had second thoughts about teaching them blank.
Boxing.
Good enough. The martial arts. Lo Wang and his monkeys. We're doing a Taekwondo demonstration. When he slipped and the monkeys finally saw their chance. One monkey gave Lo a perfect flying kick to the back of the head. One grabbed a kung fu fighting stick and the rest joined in. Said one bystander, quote, they were leaping and jumping all over the place. It was better than a Bruce Lee film. Because Bruce Lee films didn't have monkeys. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. He now has 16 points and the lead.
All right. Roxanne Roberts, you are up next. Fill in the blank. This week, the District of Columbia became the 6th jurisdiction in the U.S. to allow blank.
Same-sex marriages.
Right. The 3 American hikers arrested on espionage charges will face trial in blank.
Iran.
Right. Because they weren't potent enough, 800,000 doses of the blank vaccine were recalled.
The swine flu.
Right. More than 100 people were arrested during protests at the climate summit in blank.
Copenhagen.
Right. ABC had plans for a new 1-hour reality dating show tentatively titled blank.
Let's see. Andy Williams in Oslo.
No. It's called Conveyor Belt of Love.
No.
On Tuesday, televangelist blank died at age 91.
Oral Roberts.
Right. Scientists warned Tuesday that a massive city-sized blank is drifting toward Australia.
Iceberg.
Right. Overflowing in the turtle tank in an aquarium in Norfolk, England was found to be due to blank.
Overflowing in a turtle tank.
Yes.
Turtle pee.
Close. Turtle farts. Last Christmas, George the Turtle was given his Christmas treat of Brussels sprouts, which led to a second Christmas treat. The staff had to rush in and lower the water levels to keep the tank from overflowing. This year, the staff lowered the water levels early in anticipation of a repeat performance. Carl, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxanne had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points, but Tom still has the lead with 16.
So, Carl, how many does Paula need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right, here we go. Paula, this is for the game. You can do it.
I win, don't give me a turtle.
No. The House passed a $154 billion spending bill to promote blank growth late Wednesday night.
To promote job growth.
Right. The U.S. government confirmed that a special envoy delivered a letter from President Obama to blank.
Kim Jong-il.
Right. On Thursday, a Senate panel approved the nomination of blank as Federal Reserve Chairman.
Federal Reserve Chairman Bernanke?
Right. The long-awaited test flight of blank's new Dreamliner took place in Washington State on Tuesday morning.
Dreamliner in Washington State. Boeing.
Right. After heading and rejuvenating his uncle's animation division, blank died at age 79.
I don't know. Somebody Disney?
Yes, Roy Disney.
Oh.
Thousands of residents in the Philippines were forced to evacuate because of the activity of a nearby blank.
Shark.
No volcano. Prince Philip, known for constantly putting his foot in his mouth, came under fire this week after he blanked?
Made a terrible joke about a blind guy.
Yes, that's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a blind soldier. He had been invited to meet the Queen and Prince Philip at a tree planting event. When the Queen asked the soldier how much sight he had left after his injury, Prince Philip said, "Not a lot, judging by the tie he's wearing." Royal blood, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Well, it's evolutionary.
There you go. Carl, did Paula do well enough to win?
She needed at least 6 correct answers to tie with Tom Baudette. She had 6 correct answers.
Hey!
So Paula Poundstone and Tom Baudette are this week's coach.
Well done.
I don't win often enough to know what you do.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists after Ben Bernanke this year who will be Time Magazine's Person of the Year next year. How will they top him? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CSX working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Medicare open enrollment ends December 31st. More at Medicare.gov or 1-800-MEDICARE. And Mini, featuring the 37 miles per gallon Mini Cooper with go-kart handling. Learn more at MiniUSA.com/info. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Ashley Rayfeld. She is moving on to bigger and better things after this week. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now panel, who will be Time Magazine's Person of the Year next year and for what? Paula Poundstone.
Well, there's a new it's going to be Obama, and the reason is that we're just giving him every award no matter what. He's also going to get Miss America. He's going to get be the winner on American Idol and also Student of the Month at McKinley Elementary.
Roxanne Roberts.
Time's Person of the Year 2010 will be George W. Bush, honored as the man primarily responsible for earning Barack Obama the Nobel Peace Prize.
And Tom Baudette.
Cocktail waitress Regina Farnsworth, who after a year is the only woman in North America who claims to have never had sex with Tiger Woods.
Well, panel, if any of them become Time Magazine's Person of the Year next year, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Roxanne Roberts, and Tom Baudette. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.